Okay, we're continuing with Charles Pulaski. Mr. Pulaski, can you give me a rundown of what an average day was for you on the island from the time you got up to your duties during the day to whatever you did at night and then the time you went to bed?
Well, starting the day off, providing you didn't miss the last boat and you come over on the first boat. If you come over on the first boat, you didn't get no breakfast. Sergeant Clevenger was a 350-pound mess sergeant. And he didn't believe in saving food for other people.
What was his name?
Clevenger, Sergeant Clevenger.
Can you spell that?
C-L-E-A-V-E-N-G-E-R.
Now, were you stationed on the island, right? You slept
the
island.
Yeah, we slept on the Statue of Liberty Island.
What time did you have to get up?
Well, we had to get up at 7 o'clock.
And then was there some kind of a routine?
We'd go down and shave and get dressed. And then we had to took turns. We had to take and swing the mop through the barracks, dry mop the floor. And then we'd have breakfast 8 o'clock, and
was there a cafeteria on the island or
no,
in the barracks?
We had our own. We had our cafeteria line, just only for our mess. That's all. Nobody else. Just for the soldiers that were in the military police contingent, and we just go up in a line and. All the cooking was done on coal stoves, and the pans were like 24 by 32, and this and that and everything else was all in the different pans, and you just walk along and take a shovel full of this, a shovel full of that, whatever you wanted, and then plenty of coffee, and then on Christmas and special holidays, they would take and they'd put... 2 packs of cigarettes for every man, and then 3 packs of Bull Durham for every man. So the guys were swapping. He said, I like Bull Durham. So then the other guy had swapped the cigarettes, you know, and they're swapping back and forth. So by the time we walked out of that meal, everybody was happy.
And Bull Durham being chewing tobacco, yes?
No, Bull Durham was smoking tobacco.
Smoking tobacco.
Roll your own.
I see.
Yeah, we had a couple of guys that were really good at it. They could do it one-handed. Well, the reason why they did that was because, see, they were former cowboys. And when they were riding on a horse, then they had to hold a stirrup and roll a cigarette with one hand. And the Bull Durham hangs in their, they keep it in their mouth, the tag in their mouth, and they just dip it real fast and get enough tobacco on the paper, and then he rolls it. And seals the ends, and then lights up. This is all one-handed operation. Absolutely. I wish that we had video cameras at that time that I could take a picture of that, because that was really an elegant piece of work.
And a lost art at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Make a cigarette while you're riding horseback, one-handed. And
so after you ate breakfast, what would be some of your typical duties?
After we ate breakfast, they'd have the fatigue line up. And Sergeant would come out, and Sergeant Shaw was the first sergeant, and Sergeant Rohn, R-O-H-N, was more or less our guiding light for the day. He came on and say, all right, you guys, Pulaski, Michalupi, Ryan, Smith, you guys, coal detail. And so that meant go down, get the truck, load it up with coal, take it down, empty it out, pick up the ashes, take them down to the back of the statue, and then we'd be through by 10:15, and we'd go back to the barracks, clean up, and we could kick back until noontime mess. And everybody made noontime mess, guaranteed. because they always had a good meal. Our noontime was our heavy meal, and then the evening meal was a lighter meal. But it was always good and very popular. And they, we had some very good cooks, very good. The cooks were on a day on and a day off. Noontime, they cooked a noontime meal, and they were off until noontime the next day, you know.
So what would you do after you had your noontime meal?
Well, after we did our noontime meal, well, then maybe they'd have a little, they would come along like about 1 o'clock or 1:15 and come along and say, well, we got a little job here and a little job there, and the guys that have to turn to and go down and do it. It'd take us an hour, hour and a half, you know. But it was getting us busy doing something.
Did you do any kind of drills or anything on the island?
No, we did very little drilling. Very little drilling. We did more drilling in pistol shooting.
Oh, tell me a little bit about that.
And well, in the pistol shooting, we all shot a 45 automatic pistol, which was Army issue. And Captain Fisher, he was a coach for the one of the top New York Police Department pistol teams. And so you know that we got excellent coaching from him. I came up about number 10 or 11 out of all the guys in the barracks for pistol shot.
Was there some kind of a shooting gallery on
the
island?
We had the shooting gallery on the back of the statue, and we had like a great big sand hill. It went up around about 7 feet in the air, and we had our targets back there on that wall. And we're just taking bing, 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 and then go down and get it.
Was this something you might be doing while visitors were at the Statue of Liberty?
The visitors weren't allowed on the back half of the statue. They were kept all the way up in front. And so we never had any complications of people getting involved with us. That was absolutely unbelievable. With a little bit of where they were keeping an eye on things, that we didn't experience any problems with people coming back there. It was unbelievable. It was just signs, this way is to the statue, this way is to the boat, and that was it. And the railings were up, and they were ordinary railings. There wasn't any high 6-foot or 8-foot fences. It was just an ordinary, neat railing going along the sidewalk, guiding the people where to go. And it seemed like it contained it, you know?
Now, you must need an enormous amount of food and provisions to keep this island going. Where did all that come from, and how did it get onto the island?
Oh, boy. That was a detail that we didn't relish that. About 3 days a week. The officers, see, we had all these officers over there and their families, and they'd buy all their groceries at the PX over in Governor's Island. Then it was taken and put in boxes. The boxes were put on a truck. The truck was brought over to the ferry, and it rode the ferry over. Then the trucks would come over to the Statue of Liberty boat and unload them onto the boat. And then once they got over to the island, well, then we'd have the job of getting them off the boat, getting them on the pier, getting them in the truck, taking them up the hill to the officers' quarters, and don't get one colonel's groceries mixed up with the other colonel. Otherwise, you had a fight on your hands. You were in deep trouble. So we handled everything with kid gloves.
Now, did the provisions for the regular men, did they come onto the island the same way?
Same way, yeah. Everything was the same. We got our sides of beef, and our grocery was like a case of corn, a case of string beans, and a case of peas, a little bit of everything, you know. And then quite a bit of fresh vegetables, like lettuce, celery. We had unbelievable food. You'd think that, you know, that when you're in the Army, that you're not going to have anything... like you'd have at your dinner table at home. But you could live there the year around and you wouldn't miss anything.
Now, were vehicles allowed on the island, on Bedloe's Island? There were no cars or jeeps?
We only had just that one truck, a half-ton Ford truck, a poor truck. It took a beating, I'm telling you. And once in a while, they'd have to have the motor pool people come over from Governor's Island, and they'd have to new spark plugs and wires and a distributor, and they'd do a PM on it.
Were there any real roads on the island, or were they just...
No, it was just one road. Just one road was all it was, and that was it. From the pier up and follow them on over to the barracks, and that was the only road there was. And you couldn't even hardly see tire marks once you got past the officers' quarters, because the truck only went over there like once or twice a week, or going over to getting coal or dumping the ashes. Otherwise, there was very little tire marks there.
So everything was carried manually then?
Yeah, there was a lot of handwork. Kept us in good shape.
That's why you were fed so well.
Well, I'll tell you another thing. You know, when we went up on Times Square, there would be like 3 to 5 men, depending on what day it was. On Friday and Saturday night, we'd go down there about 7 o'clock, and we'd stay till 11. And then we'd have sidearms and a nightstick. That was our standard uniform. And you had a polish. And they inspected you before you left the island, so there was no ifs, ands, or buts. You looked elegant when you went on to Times Square. So we'd go over and get on the subway free and ride up to Times Square and walk around and see that everybody's, all the sailors and Marines and the Army personnel were all behaving and nobody drunk. And then...
This was duty you had 3 times a week, you
three
said.
3 times a week. Then we had the option to go over on 7th Avenue and 42nd Street to Longchamp's restaurant and get a free meal. We go over there about 9:30. Half the time we didn't go over there. Because, I mean, we were so well fed on the island. How much food can a person eat? So I'd go over there like on Saturday night just, you know, to for the novelty of it, to say, well, I ate in Longchamp's, you know. And the...
But the whole purpose for being there was to just sort of be a presence.
Yeah, presence, yeah. Presence
so that people
for
didn't
military
do
personnel.
Anything.
Yeah. And once in a while, we'd have some soldiers that get obnoxious, you know. And we'd get a hold of them and say, look, you're going to straighten up and fly right. Otherwise, you're going to have to go back, you know, go back to Governor's Island.
You say we. How many people were sent on this detail?
Well, 3 to 5, depending on, like, Friday and Saturday night, we had 5 people, including the sergeant. It was always a sergeant. And we had a 42nd and Broadway was our normal station to meet. And we'd branch out from there. Guys would go this direction, that he'd tell them which way he's seen the soldiers all moving, you know. So then they keep track of them. So once in a while, I get a hold of a couple of guys and say, look, you know, we just get a hold of them saying, look, this is the second time now. So you're under arrest. Come on with me. And take them down in the subway. Get on the train. And just as the train is going to take off, I'd get off the car. Leave them on the train. Say, don't you come back, you know. Point to them. Don't you come back, you know?
Now, when you had this detail, did you stay overnight in New York, or did you go back out to Bedloe's Island at the end of the...
We went back out to Bedloe's Island. We always left Times Square so that we'd get the last boat. And it varied during the week. I think the last boat was 10:30, and 11:30 or 12 o'clock was the last boat on Friday and Saturday night.
And this is a boat that's run by the Army?
No, this is a boat that's run by the... I can't think of the name of the people that had the concession. They had a concession to operate the boat.
But just for the Army people, or is this the boat that's bringing the visitors out?
And Army. It was, of course, the Army rode free, but the civilians had to pay. $3 or $4 to ride over.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I just naturally assumed
at that particular time, they could only go to the statue. There was nobody coming on Ellis Island.
Did you have any interaction with Ellis Island at all, or did in that time in the late 1930s?
Not while I was in the Army. No, we just look over there and see there was maintenance people over there, you know, something going on, but nothing amounted to anything.
You know, you mentioned earlier that you dumped the ashes in the harbor.
Right.
And I have to ask you, what did you do with your garbage?
We burnt the garbage in the boiler room.
And then the ashes would be dumped.
Yeah, the ashes would in turn be dumped. But there was no garbage being dumped in the water. It was just put the ashes on the hill, and some of them would go down to the water's edge, and you know how a hill develops. So that the ashes from 100 tons of coal probably moved the island out 5 feet. Made the island 5 feet bigger on that end.
Was there a building on the island that was devoted to recreation for the Army? Was there some building where you would go?
We had a building where there was something like a gymnasium, and downstairs was a bowling alley. We had the bowling alley. So they could play basketball upstairs and bowl downstairs. And the bowling, you paid for that. You didn't get that free. Although it was operated by a sergeant, a great big guy. Oh, I can't remember his name. A great big guy. And there was no freebies. And then you could walk out in front and go up the stairs, and you could get snacks, beer or soda, potato chips, whatever, you know. Was nice.
What else did you do for recreation? Did they have dances or parties or something?
Well, the only dances we had that were amounted to anything, actually, you had to go over to Governor's Island on Thursday night, and you could dance, and they had all kinds of girls from all over New York and Hoboken. They came over, and we would dance with them, you know, and coffee and donuts. And then we'd see the girls to their ferry to go home, you know. And then on our island, though, we had, during the summertime, a couple times during the summer, we would have the New York Police Department boat would come over to the island, tie up to the pier in the back, and roll a barrel of beer out on the dock. And then we'd muster a gang and get that beer was down there and in a cooler in a hurry, you know, and we'd have a lawn party, and it'd be officers and all of us that weren't on duty would all be there for that party. And Lieutenant Van Bibber, he was like on the arrangement committee, and he'd get two or three girls over there. And they do bubble dances.
Can you describe a bubble dance for us?
Well, something like Sally Rand used to do, you know. They had the bubbles in front and back, you know, like three bubbles in front and three bubbles in back. And she'd dance around. And as she danced around, she'd go past the officers, you know, not by us, but by the officers. And then one of the officers would catch it with a cigarette or a cigar and start blowing the bubbles. So she got down to one front and back, and then she'd disappear. So whether she had anything under that balloon, we never knew. We never could find out. But it gets your mind wandering, you know. Say, oh, but that was still what elegant dancing those girls did. Absolutely elegant. So our parties usually last till 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, you know, and there'd be maybe around about 50, 60 people out there, officers, you know, and their families, and we had one wonderful time. And then, of course, we supplied big pans of chicken and potato salad and cake, layer cake, with a real nice icing on it, you know? And then that was one thing that those parties, they never had no liquor. It was unbelievable. All right, you can't really call beer liquor, you know? So we just, beer would suffice, you know? You could drink all you wanted.
You mentioned that you were sort of out on a lawn somewhere. What did the grounds look like? Were there flowers and trees around the Statue of Liberty?
We had a plot of grass that was around about 300 feet long and about 300 feet wide. And over near the officers' quarters there was a little bit of gardening. But otherwise, there was just a few trees around. And then we called the patch of grass at 300 by 300, we call that a parade ground. We never, I think only once or twice in the whole time I was there, in the whole year I was there, that we get the gang out there and do some marching, just in case. The captain wanted to make sure that we could get out there and do it, you know. But it really was unbelievable. It's just like we was drilling every day. It was perfect, you know. We'd only do like a half an hour drilling, and the captain say, good, very good, dismissed, you know.
Tell me a little bit about, you mentioned that the officers had families there. Tell me a little bit about the interaction of the men with the officers' families, if they had any interaction with children or wives.
Well, no, we had very little personal connection with the officer. It was only just that we got to know them better by going over and painting in their quarters. You know, paint one room here and one room there.
And you said these were older homes, but well-maintained.
Oh, they were well-maintained, but they were 95 to 100 years old, at least that much. But they were comfortable, they were warm, they had lots of windows, and the bedrooms were all on the second floor, and they were elegant bedrooms. Great big spacious ones like you see downtown New York in those fancy hotels, you know?
And were they all in one spot on the island?
They were in a row. They started like about 100 feet from where you got off the pier onto the mainland, where the fence said visitors this way. From there on, about another 100 feet, and you'd come to the first officer's quarter. And all the officers' quarters were on the left-hand side of the road, and on the right-hand side, we had non-com quarters, where a non-commissioned officer, and a lot of non-commissioned officers worked over in Whitehall Street, or else they worked in Governor's Island, and they still lived in these here buildings here. And they were nice quarters. They were very nice. And, of course, people had their own furniture, you know. And if a guy got transferred, well, he just have to take and move everything down to the pier, onto the boat, over to the shore. Oh, what a rigmarole. We were glad when nobody moved.
Were most people there for a short time, or were some people there for many years?
Most of the people there for very many years, and an average, I would say, of 7 or 8 years. And we had a couple doctors that were there, and the rest were all over in Governor's Island. That was like the mainstay of New York area for armed forces, infantry plus. And they had like six outfits there on Governor's Island. And also they had the Castle Williams, which was housed about 150 prisoners, of which 35 were lifers. They were there for life. They were federal prisoners, government. I mean, they were army prisoners, all army prisoners in there. And they were always at hard labor. They always had hard labor for them guys. And the,
was there a prison or something at the statue too? Was there a jail area?
There was a jail and a statue, but it was never ever used to my knowledge.
Do you remember
and
seeing
it? What it was in the back door of the statue. To the right, took you to the room where the switchboard was for the statue lights, and to the left, took you to the jail down a hall. And the jail had it was a double cell jail, and was around about two rooms, about 10 by 15. And on the walls was writing of prisoners that had lived there, that had been incarcerated there. And the dates went back back before the 1900s. And I wish to heavens today, I'd be down there with my video camera taking pictures of it. But when the WPA came on the statue to refurbish, they refurbished the base of the statue, had one column that was in trouble. So the WPA took it upon themselves to redo that function of that one girder. And they took around about between 3 and 4 months. And of course, all the materials come in on the back pier and was trucked by the truck up to the statue. And that was when the jail disappeared. They stole it for the iron. And they said they could care less. Let them have it. Who cares? We don't use the jail. We don't need it. So who cares, you know? They just let it go like that, and that was the end of it. And I still am curious. I'm hoping that I can get permission to go down in that part of the statue when I go over there tomorrow. And maybe the walls didn't get painted in that area, and some of that writing on the walls is still there. It would be wonderful if it is, because there would be some names on there that have probably been forgotten about for, 100 years? Because I'm 81, you know, and 1912, back another 12 years, 1900. It's an awful long time.
In our last 2 minutes, can you tell me how you left the Statue of Liberty?
Well, very reluctantly, we got official notice from the Army that they were going to discontinue our contingent being on the statue, and that we were going to move lock, stock, and barrel to Fort Hamilton, New York. That's down in 4th Avenue, the end of the 4th Avenue subway. And it's about six blocks from there, a six-block walk over to Fort Hamilton proper. And in there they had the barracks for the military police, and I don't know, there was another barracks there that never paid much attention to it. And they also had the horses there too. But we had to take and pile our bunks all on the truck, take them down to the pier, and take them over from the boat, and then they were loaded onto a van and taken out to Fort Hamilton. But we left the island very reluctantly, I'm telling you. I was just like, oh boy, sorry, pal. this is it, you know? And then to go over to this new life on Fort Hamilton, and the officers with their polo ponies, and I got a chance to drive I got advanced to drive the truck for all the refuse from the stable. I won't divulge the secrets of that, but then on, you know, until I was discharged. I got married and I had a child and
lots of grandchildren.
No grandchildren next week.
Not then.
But that was the start of it anyhow.
Well, Mr. Pulaski, I want to thank you very much. This has been a great interview, and you've just been filled with great information. I want to thank you from coming from California to do it.
I hope that I've given you everything that would enhance the picture of the primitive life that was on the statue, which everybody was on their best behavior. You didn't need a policeman over there. It was absolutely wonderful.
Great. Well, thank you again, Mr. Pulaski.
You're welcome, I'm sure, anytime.
This is Paul Sigrist signing off with Charles Pulaski on Wednesday, December 29th, 1993, at the Ellis Island Immigration Museum.